you up and I see you're back to being mine. You took a ride and you'll leave me at my home tonight. I'm not no savior, I'm not no Jesus Christ. I'm just walking along and I'm trying to live my life. But I know, oh, that sometimes it's hard to let go. And I can see, oh, that sometimes all you need, all you need is to be. Ba-da-da-dum, ba-dum. Oh, that wild in your eyes sparkles in the sunshine. Your eyes are open wide and you see the summertime. With me in January, I will pick you up and I'll see you night after night. Picking your pants up with your pockets and fighting your fights. But sometimes it's hard to let go. And I can see, oh, that sometimes all you need, all you need is to be. Ba-da-da-dum, ba-dum. This fire burning. I'll gather up all the things we ever need to see us to the spring. Oh, there's still a chance that this is all what we wanted. So I'll be around when you figure out that you've got it. But I know, oh, that sometimes it's hard to let go. And I can see, oh, that sometimes all you need, all you need is to be. Ba-da-da-dum, ba-dum. Ba-da-da-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. Ba-da-da-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum.
Hamilton-based singer-songwriter Sarah Beattie describes herself as a scientist as well as a musician. While completing a PhD in environmental science, she found time to release an off-the-floor debut album, The Stripped-Down Girl in a Guitar, Black Gramophone, in 2012. Now, Black Gramophone blurs the lines between rootsy blues and the singer-songwriter genre, while Sarah's playful and imaginative lyrics and soulful vocal delivery simultaneously draws comparisons to both Regina Spektor and Billie Holiday. We caught up with Sarah at home in Hamilton. So it's great to talk to you today, Sarah.
Ah, likewise. Thank you for reaching out.
This is an interview I've wanted to do for a while. Actually, I picked up your Black Gramophone album, I think, in 2013 I was received a copy. I know that it came out in 2012. And you were always on my radar, but somehow I never quite got round to actually making the time for the interview. Now we're doing that, which is wonderful. You're Hamilton-based, is that right?
Yes, I am. I've been here for about 5 years now, and doing music really kind of in a focused capacity as a singer-songwriter for the last few years.
Now, what I'd like to do to start off is to talk about how you got into music. That's one of the questions I always find fascinating, because everybody has an interesting story. Your story is, I would say, more interesting than most, because you're also a scientist as well as a musician. But we're going to hold the science part just now, and let's talk about your earliest experiences in music and why you decided that you wanted to make it a major part of your life.
Yeah, my earliest experiences, I think, were pretty organic. You know, like my family wasn't terribly musical, but there was definitely appreciation for music in my family. My mom and dad both listened to a lot of country music, sort of in their own respective ways. My dad really liked singer-songwriters. So that was part of my musical, home life. But really where, I was able to explore music and develop as a musician was in public school. I went to public schools in Rochester, New York. That's where my mom lived. And they had really, really good music programs. So I was in choirs from third grade on, and just had really great music teachers, both in choir and then in band. I played French horn in public school, and so there were just lots of opportunities to do, to be in choir, and then also there were sort of choir competitions where you could audition to be in all county choirs, and there were also musical theater. Arts programming was a big part of my sort of youth, and I think that the things that I developed and the knowledge that I developed in that sort of environment really, really shaped who I am as an artist today. Like, I think a big part of it was the fact that I was always doing music with fairly large ensembles. Yeah, when you're in those kind of large ensembles, there's always this element where you are doing, music as a musician, but then there are times during rehearsal where you're sitting and listening, and you're spending a lot of time listening to other parts, to other instruments. And I think that listening is a big, big thing that has really affected me as a musician, and something that I very much value in that education.
I want to talk about a comment that you put in the Black Gramophone album, and that is music teachers are awesome, because not everybody has that feeling. Sometimes, people feel that the actual teaching of music can somehow stifle the creativity, but I'm going to get you to give us your take on that.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing, and it's something that I know that I've definitely kind of looked at in my own life, and I've certainly heard it from a number of musicians. The fear around, losing your voice or losing a part of you that you self-identify with as an artist. And, I don't know, I think music teachers are awesome because they teach you not just about the technical aspects of music, but they teach you about these sort of softer cultural things about relating to human beings and communication and all of these, they teach you existential things coupled in how the music sort of comes to be. It's not just about the notes. It's not just about the technicality. It's about all of these interactions that happen. And the music is just a language. It's just a form by which we can all communicate with one another and have a conversation with one another. But there's all this subtlety and nuance that happens as a consequence of dynamics and of voices coming together, and how, two voices or two instruments can really sound, they create a third energy in the space. And so I think that there are different needs as you're growing up, and being taught, what a 10-year-old musician needs, to inspire them and also develop technical vocabulary is different than what maybe a teenager needs, and is also maybe different than what an adult needs. But I think if it's done well and with love and with compassion and with understanding, I think that learning is a good thing. So
tell us how the science fits into things, because as I understand it, you've just completed your PhD in environmental science. Is that right?
Well, I'm very close to defending. I'm going to be submitting very, very soon my thesis, and defending it a little bit later in the summer. And science has come in kind of, you know, kind of later. Like, I didn't really start studying science actively until I was in my 20s. And, you know, I'd been a musician for a much longer period than that. And really, when I started to focus on science, I was still doing music, still trying to figure out how I wanted to do music and figuring out my artistic voice. But it really kind of took a sideline to developing as a scientist. And then, you know, a few years ago, I kind of realized that I wasn't sort of accessing my musical self in the way that was fulfilling enough for me. So I just kind of figured out a way to make them, you know, more balanced. And in doing so, they've kind of created this like music science baby thing in me, which has, you know, been a surprise to me, because traditionally I kind of viewed them as existing in these separate spaces. You know, culturally, there's sort of a notion, or I guess a undertone, that, you know, these are disparate subjects, and that they don't cross paths too much. The interesting thing is that the more I got into doing research, and the more I realized how creative a process research was, the more I realized how sort of primed I was as a consequence of being a songwriter, and likewise that the process for developing new songs and trying to make a contribution to music is very much similar to the process of developing new scientific insights and new understanding and about the truth of the world and how we can better understand that. So it's been kind of an interesting journey of, you know, it's not something I certainly set out to do or something that I had a really clear focus on from the outset. I wish I could say that I did, but it's been kind of an organic thing for me too.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because listening to Black Gramophone, we actually started, before we came to air for the interview today, we played To Be, which is the first track from the album. It's a lovely song. It's a very interesting album because this is really stripped down. It's just you and a guitar, I think, for 11 of the 12 tracks. You even harmonize with yourself on a couple of them. And then you have someone play with you on the last one. Was that a real intent going in to try and make the debut, you know, stripped down Sarah Beattie? You know, this is Sarah Beattie with a guitar. Was that the real intent?
I wanted the songs to be and feel really raw. You know, it was really kind of, I've been writing songs for a really, really long time, but I never really self-identified as a songwriter. And so with the record, it was kind of like, what do I want to say with this record? You know, what am I trying to communicate with the world? What am I trying to communicate with myself? And so it was really an exploration of you know, what does it mean to be a songwriter? And for me, I kind of kept coming back to, well, it's about the song. It's about the song. And what are the rudiments of a song? What makes a song a song? And so I just went to, like, well, it's a melody, it's a rhythm, and it's a lyric, you know, at its sort of base fundamental core. So I'm just going to explore that to, you know, to whatever I can explore it to in my own capacity. And I also wanted to do it without the influence of external sort of ideas, in a broad sense. I'd grown up, you know, playing in ensembles, playing in bands, and I really kind of just wanted to figure out what my own voice was and explore what that was without sort of being swayed in different directions in that way. I mean, it's kind of a funny thing to say because, You know, as an artist, you walk through the world and you're always being influenced, you know, through the stuff that you listen to, through the conversations that you have, through the life that you live. But it was kind of that mode of, like, I wanted to learn everything and then forget everything and do the work and then sort of look at it after the fact. So that was really kind of the intention of that record.
One of the things that comes through on the record, you know, apart from the fact that it's really stripped down and really clearly live off the floor. I mean, it's one of the things that's exciting about it. It has a real live feel to it for a studio album, is the way that you play with the lyrics. You know, you've drawn comparison with people like Regina Spektor because you have a quirkiness, a playfulness about the lyrics. When you write a song, take us through that process. You know, how do you decide on what the song is going to be about? You know, when you're coming up with the melody and the lyric to go with it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because that's such a variable thing. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it's the lyric that comes first. I mean, I'm probably, you know, I have a very similar process to many artists in the sense that, yeah, sometimes it's the lyric that comes first. Sometimes it's the melody. Sometimes it's you just plunking around on the guitar with different chords and you go, oh, that sounds nice. You know, I might do something with that. And then sometimes you mumble through some words and then, you know, have a little recorder, a little pocket recorder. And then I go, oh, and a line sort of pops out, you know, the subconscious, when you can start to sort of access some of that, sometimes it reveals a truth to you. It's not necessarily a conscious endeavor, what you're putting out into the world. And I think that for me, that's kind of one of the most exciting things for me as a songwriter is that, you know, sometimes I set out with an intention to write a song, as I've done with some of the newer stuff that's coming out on the new record. But sometimes, particularly some of the more emotive stuff, it's me kind of trying to pull out of me stuff that's lurking beneath the surface that's just, you know, not part of my conscious thinking. And then once it's there, kind of looking at it and making and trying to make sense of it and kind of go, oh, what is it that I'm experiencing? What is it that I'm feeling? And, you know, what is the message in this, you know, for either for me or for somebody else? So it's a real exploratory, experimental kind of environment. And I'd like to say that I had a really clear focus of this is how I kind of do things, I guess. But, I just try and embrace, you know, however it comes is how it comes. And, you know, one of the things I really like to do is just to keeping the muscles sharp or keeping the muscles, you know, sort of active is doing some aspect of songwriting on a regular basis. So whether it is melody driven or whether it is lyrical driven, always keeping those muscles active and engaged.
I'd like to take a break with another song from Black Gramophone. Now, the song I've chosen is the Finer Things, which has a nice bluesy feel to us. Can you talk a little bit about that song?
Yeah, you know, I've just really liked the blues for a really long time. And so, and I think a lot of that comes through, you know, there's very bluesy undertones in a lot of what I do and a lot of the songwriting that I do. And I'm trying to remember the history and I'm not remembering it super well. I do remember sort of like, you know, being confronted and kind of going like, okay, blues, you know, blues songs tend to have, you know, a certain kind of arc and a certain kind of, you know, you done me wrong kind of thing. That's a fairly common theme in blues music. But how do I switch this up? How do I try and make it a little bit more modern? How do I, you know, give it a little bit of a cheeky twist? So that's kind of how that song came to be.
Let's play that just now. This is Sarah Beatty from the album Black Gramophone and Finer Things. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
You got a secret you're keeping from me. I know that you've got a luxury I don't know about. Oh, you ain't been fooling me. But you'll find out real soon that you ain't hiding nothing from me. You spend your money on finer things, fur coats and fast cars and diamond rings, I know. Oh, you ain't been buying me. But you'll find out real soon that you ain't hiding nothing from me. You like the good food they serve downtown, waiters in white gloves and steaks by the pound. Oh, you ain't been buying me. But you'll find out real soon that you ain't hiding nothing from me. Oh, you go to the Jew joint and you're picking up girls, kissing and squeezing and rocking their world. Oh, no.
wash your hair, trying to get the smell out of some other girl. Oh, you ain't been fooling me, but you'll find out real soon that you ain't hiding from me. Yeah, you took me for granted, so I took you by surprise. Yeah, the one you saw me kissing was your girl on the side. Oh, you ain't been fooling me. Yeah, you found out real soon that you weren't keeping nothing from me. Yeah, you found out real soon that you weren't keeping nothing, nothing, nothing from me.
That's Sarah Beattie with Finer Things from the album Black Gramophone. Sarah Beattie is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. This is such a wonderful conversation, Sarah. I'm so pleased that we're able to spend time together. Just before the break, though, you alluded to a new album, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about where you're at just now with your music.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about it. It's still in the production process. I've been writing these songs, you know, pretty much from the time where I finished recording Black Gramophone. You know, recording one thing and being really actively creatively involved in one project usually for me sort of it bleeds over, and then you end up being kind of creative in other ways. And so so these songs that I'm recording now have been just developing over that span of time. And we recorded the bulk of it in December. I had Justine Fisher, who plays upright bass for a Freddie Goldsmith band, coupled with Maddie Simpson, who's also in that band, and Dave Clark, who's in the Woodshed Orchestra and does all kinds of stuff. I had them all come over to my house, and we did live off the floor bed tracks in my house, all set up in different rooms, and just playing along, pressing the record button and saying go. So now I'm in the sort of the refining stages of, you know, just bringing out certain features of the track and doing some of the overdubs and just kind of fine tuning things. I'm looking forward to that coming out in the next few months.
Maybe at the same time that you get the thesis out the way as well?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, and when I submit my thesis, I have a minimum of 5 weeks over which I have like nothing to do. So that's the time that I'm earmarking to do all of these minor production and post-production and mixing, mastering sort of thing. So it's going to be a busy summer.
You mentioned when we talked earlier that the science and the music are kind of blending together. Does that mean we're going to hear more of them blending together in the new songs on the album that's just about to come out?
Yeah, there's definitely a continuation. I think it's, there's an exploration of science. There's an exploration of some other things that I've been looking at and just learning about. The record's got a lot of female-centric characters and ideas in it. That's been something that I've also been exploring. So, I think, and it's funny, when I kind of think about it and I kind of, you know, look back at a lot of my songs, I mean, human beings, we're really connected to the environment. We're really connected to weather and climate and all of these things. So, you know, a lot of that stuff in terms of talking about, you know, nature and talking about using landscape as metaphor and, you know, a lot of that stuff comes out. And now I kind of look at it and I go, well, some of this stuff is quite literally scientific. You know, I use certain scientific language that, you know, the average maybe songwriter isn't using as intently. There's definitely science and scientific themes that are coming out. I've got one song called Prehistoric Sludge, which is around hydraulic fracturing that I'm really, really excited about. Kind of a cooking tune. And I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I can see maybe a tour down the road where you'll lecture and play some music at the same time. I suppose, I mean, a lot of musicians do that anyway, because, you know, there's a lot of musicians out there. I mean, look at Neil Young's recent tours, where he's been talking about the impact of the tar sands. So
Totally,
an opportunity to do that. Can we talk about the live experience? You've just played a show in Hamilton with Janis. You're going to be playing one with Janis in Guelph. Janis is Jen Gilmore and Dennis Gaumont's roots band. They're very bluesy. There's just the two of them, but they make an incredible sound. You've played with them. Can you talk about how you fit into a show like that?
Yeah, I mean, well, their music is really expansive, so I feel like there's a lot of people that and a lot of artists that could fit into their stuff, because they cover a lot of ground in a really, really concise way. I mean, like, you know, as multi-instrumentalists, like, they're doing just a lot of stuff on stage, making some really, really cool sounds that are really groove-oriented. I think that that's where I identify most with them, is that I think there's just an inherent appreciation within, you know, among the three of us, where groove is a lot of fun and is really, really cool. And, you know, but some of the stuff is way beyond. I mean, you know, Jen's doing some circle breathing with the didgeridoo and making sounds and growls and, you know, these cool screechy things that, you know, I'm not doing that. So it's really, really cool, because there's this thread of connectivity between what they're doing and I think what I'm doing. But there's also, you know, pretty vast expanse in terms of what they're doing musically and what I'm doing musically. One of the things that I really connected with, actually, in the show last night, is lyrically, their stuff is really conscious. There's a lot of really, sort of like, I guess that's conscious lyrical approaches and presentation of the music, and that was something that I really, really appreciated and very much identified with in some of my own music.
Well, when you play live yourself, I'm mostly solo shows. I know you're going to be working with a band for the new album. I'm just curious as to, you mentioned you played in a lot of bands before. The album Black Gramophone is very much a stripped-down solo affair. Most of your shows, I would imagine, mimic that just at the current time?
Yeah, I really like playing solo. Playing solo has made me what I think a much more tuned-in performer, much more sensitive to the audience, much more sensitive to myself as a performer. You know, when it's kind of like, I don't know, it's like a pasta dish where, you know, if you've only got three ingredients, those three ingredients have to be good, because otherwise, you know, something's off. And, you know, I really have enjoyed, you know, the sort of process of developing as a solo performer, because in some respects, like, you know, the audience becomes my band. The audience becomes me, just as a, you know, a facilitator or somebody who's just kind of there to, you know, just bring the music into the space. But everybody else is really making the music happen. It's a collective effort kind of thing. So, you know, I really have enjoyed, and I do enjoy, and I think I'll always play solo shows. There's a great pleasure in playing with other people, and I look forward to doing more of that in the future. Some of this goes back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier, where just defining my own voice really well and kind of, you know, getting a good grounding in that so that I could also communicate to other musicians, like, you know, what it was that I guess I wanted to say and what contribution I thought I had to make to the music. And just having a firmer sort of footing in that. You know, like, being in choirs, one of the things that I actually love is singing harmonies. I love accompanying other people. But when you're writing songs, it requires a different kind of voice. It requires a voice of a thought or an idea. And it's about, you know, how you see the world and how you're able to take in the world and how you're able to digest it and communicate something new. And you can do that as a support musician, which I had, you know, done in a lot of ways, and which I always like doing, you know, in terms of harmony and playing with other people. But it was a different, it was just, I had to make a sort of different switch, or, you know, build that part of my musical muscles. So playing solo is what you'll see.
Well, this is great. You know, I'm really looking forward to having the interview when we talk about the new album. Do you have a name for that yet, by the way?
I've kicked around a couple, but nothing has quite stuck just yet. Yeah.
Well, I will definitely want a conversation with you when that comes out, because this has been enthralling. I wanted to thank you for spending the time to talk to us today. We're going to finish with another song from the album. Now, from the Black Gramophone album, I've selected The Right Shoes, which I sense has an interesting story to it, and I thought it would be kind of nice for you just to talk about that before we play it.
Yeah, that one's probably, you know, one of the most sort of emotive, stripped-down songs of the record, in a certain respect. It's about me, you know, exploring some of the vulnerable parts of myself in a way that, you know, songwriting's so neat because you're able to sort of tap into parts of your, you know, conscious and subconscious through this sort of softer medium than just like, you know, than being really kind of direct. And it's a funny thing because it's like, oh, well, it's from you, it's inside of you. But sometimes that stuff is really difficult to access. And so, yeah, it was just me, you know, kind of coming on the other side of some really difficult things of, you know, loss of innocence and growing up and loss in general, and finding a way to, finding a way to give it a voice and give it, you know, give it the air to breathe, I guess.
Well, it's funny because when I was listening to the album today in preparation for the interview again, Arnie DeFranco's voice came through as well. And I thought, you know, there's a little bit of Arnie in there as well. Would she be someone else that would be a reasonable thing to say for comparison?
Well, that would be awesome because she's definitely a hero of mine. She's definitely a hero. She explores, you know, huge range of human capacity, from the uber vulnerable to the uber strong willed, and I'm going to kick somebody in the nuts kind of thing, you know, or whatever. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
But thank you very much for having me, and I've really enjoyed the conversation. And
we'll do it again, definitely.
I look forward to it. Yeah. Awesome.
We're going to finish today with The Right Shoes from the album Black Gramophone. Our guest today, Sarah Beattie. It's been an absolute pleasure, Sarah. We look forward to seeing you in Guelph on the 29th with Janice.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you too.
Thanks again.
All my pain may seem so trite, but it's the thing that keeps me warm at night. And I'm looking all around to find a little piece of truth, written in graffiti in some mangled up telephone booth. And I swear that I would run if I could find the right shoes, broken in with a bit of tread left late at night, and out of breath I forget about these blues. But instead I stay and clean up the mess that's been stifling me, sifting through all this nostalgia to find what lies beneath. Oh, my history. Oh, 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 my history. And I swear that I would run if I could find the right shoes, broken in with a bit of tread left late at night, and out of breath I forget about these blues. So I hold my hands up close to my chest to see if I can find a rhythm I can stick to a little bit more or less. When I look around me, I know that it's a damn it will I leave, but for the moment I find I'm distracted by all the things I can see. And I swear that I would run if I could find the right shoes, broken in with a bit of tread left late at night, and out of breath I forget about these blues.